Good afternoon. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. While we have not devoted today's program exclusively to the issue of ICBL and the environment in which minority shareholders are operating, it's been a dominant topic today. You are still free to raise other issues with us. While we have on the line Doug Skeet, who has been associated with the Barbados Association of Corporate Shareholders for several years now. Indeed, Doug, you come across as the lone voice in this association because I don't hear anybody else whose name is mentioned.
There's some others.
But they stay behind the scenes.
Yeah, Kevin Awareness Matter, we got quite a few folks who are taking an interest. You know, no one person can do this. You need to get a lot of other heads around to make recommendation and to assist.
Yes. How big is this association, would you say?
Well, the association, David, unfortunately in Barbados, you know, Barbadians, let's say the investors, tend only, you see, an instance like ICBL, everybody is quiet, says not much, and with this association, we've had some members. We didn't have a lot. We would have meetings, but then folks wouldn't come to the meetings. And the only time you got them interested was when something like ICBL pops up and, you get an interest. We also were trying to encourage the investors to attend the annual general meetings. And you would hardly have a large attendance until something again happens. So when there is a hostile takeover or a potential takeover, then you get the investors coming out to see what is in it, what is going to happen to my shares or happen to me, and that type of thing. So, and there's been very little activity. I mean, if you check the Barbados Stock Exchange, some days I think it operates about 4 days a week. And some days there's no trading. Not a single share is traded some days on the exchange. And those that are traded, very minimal, sometimes just one company. Now, that is not the definition, really, of a stock exchange. That totally isn't. You want a lot more activity, and you need people. So you need a mix of individuals, those who are the short-term ones looking for a quick buck, quick profit, those who are medium, I might be in for 5 years, and then there's the ones who are the long-term, I'm going to be hanging around with these shares 10, 15, because they might also, those in the long-term might want also to pass on those shares to their children, their grandchildren, and so forth, so that those shares remain in the family, just like piece of land and part of the assets of the family. Okay. So we're not that vibrant simply because Barbadian investors tend to be very passive.
Yes. I'm reminded that parents and guardians of students attending the Lawrence Teague Memorial Primary School are advised that the school is being closed early because of external odors that have been affecting the students and staff on the compound. And therefore, you need to go and pick up your children who have been involved in the face-to-face classes. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, welcome.
Good afternoon to everyone and to your guests.
Good afternoon.
Yes, Mr. Ellis, I believe that the argument or the conversation should be the value of state-owned entities, the value of a state having its own state-owned revenue-generating entities, money sorely needed to do capital projects, etc., for the country. And I would want to, if I'm going to put the blame on anyone, for starters, I will be putting the blame on our representatives because they are the ones that were negotiating the deals. They know that to sell state-owned entities or compromise state-owned entities would diminish the revenue intake of the state. And they gather this knowledge, and they would never educate the masses about it. Now, the masses have to take some level of responsibility as well, because we are supposed to be an educated society. We have access to the internet now for many years, and we should have been out there doing our research. ICBL, so unfortunate. Another revenue streaming entity that benefited Barbados greatly, but the people were encouraged to sell. A classic example, and I keep talking about this, the BNB. You come and you offer BNB to the Barbadian public and say, buy in to the bank. But the bank belongs to the state. It means that it belongs to the people already. So you come in to sell me my own business. Not people who sell for something like that. You know, these are the. My concern is that when we elect representatives into Parliament to look after our interests, for some reason or another, some type of food or beautiful drink sort of like changes their mind, and they just they go against the well-being of the actual people, and they end up only seeing after the interests of a few, and it makes the country poor. Our people need to understand something. Barbados is a state. It has to look after itself. It has to make money directly, direct revenue, not indirect. Indirect for me is taxes and fees. It's just rent. We need to be making serious money investments. And in order to do that, we must have entities that generate revenue.
Ben, you forget something. You forget some of the factors that drive the government to sell off what we call the family silver.
Alleged factors.
Like when your foreign reserves low.
For example, allegedly.
That's alleged.
I can tell you. No, I can give you an example now.
Let me ask you. What could
I'm
be?
Give an example.
Let me hear what was alleged about the sale. What was alleged about the foreign reserves position when we sold the shares in BNB?
Okay, the information that I gathered is that the bank was poorly run. Politicians sent their friends to cause problems. The farmers owe the bank. All kind of comments. Comments that also apply to commercial banks, but they're not selling their bank. Okay.
I asked you about foreign reserves, and you're telling me about other factors.
I came on to speak about state-owned entities, not.
That's a state-owned. National Bank was a state-owned entity.
Well, yeah.
Right. That's what I'm talking about, the value of having state-owned entities. If we have state-owned entities that are not compromised, foreign reserves, we wouldn't have such problems with foreign reserves, because we would have revenue to do the things that we need.
I think you better answer him. Answer him for Mr.
I was at a loss to follow his train of thought. I think the question is, and his question has to be, what are the benefits of owning these state-owned enterprises, commercial state-owned enterprises, having them owned by the state as opposed to having them owned privately? And, you know, so one can have, and I keep hearing this argument, as Barbados we should have our own bank. My feeling here is that if you're saying we should have a development bank, I would agree with you. But the argument is whether the state is better placed to run a commercial organization than having it run privately. And I think on the evidence says that these entities are always better run or managed by the private sector than by government. And you can see it, there's evidence. BNB was a government, and the individual referred to it, because you have all sorts of persons going in and getting funds, getting loans, and they're not repaid. It is far a better run and managed entity today than it was when it was government owned.
I would like to say something to that.
Similar to ICBL. So you got to get the argument. And to think of a foreign exchange, I don't know that how these companies create, because most of the business, the income, is generated from within Barbados. I don't know that there. In the case of ICBL and BNB, most of these, the income is generated locally. So I'm not sure how much, you know, other than the transfers of income that take place, because someone might be sending funds into Barbados. I'm talking about the actual income itself is generated from within the country.
I just wanted to point out that when one of the first big debates about the sale of the so-called family silver took place when Barbados, the government sold its shares in what was then called BET, Barbados External Telecommunications Company. My recollection of that transaction was rooted in the state of the foreign reserves.
That's correct.
When we sold our shares in the Hilton, that was as a consequence of trying to... No, when we sold the shares in BNB, it was to put the money into the redevelopment of the Hilton Hotel. All right? Because you didn't have it otherwise. You felt, the government felt, that the situation was such that you had to go in that direction. So there are other factors that have influenced it too. As the caller suggested, there was talk about the inefficiency, that the government is not seen as being the best entity to run state-owned operations. Indeed, somebody points out here to us that they say, how many state-owned entities earn profits that can be distributed to the government and the people of Barbados? Many of the SOEs are considered to be providing a social good and are not allowed to recoup their full operational costs and earn profits. They depend on government for subventions, because the government is also making a decision that says that if you were to carry your true fee or price, it would be too hard on average people. So it pushes up cost of living and all of that.
Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
What is the name of your guest?
This is Doug Skeet.
Mr. Skeet.
Chartered accountant.
Okay. With respect to the running of these entities, you said, allegedly, that it appears to others that the state-owned entity would be better run privately. But those entities are not ran privately. They are sold to private people. There's a big difference. And we need not to... Just one second.
Okay.
Just one moment. Mm-hmm. So if we had hired, for example, a private management crew to manage the bank, I could understand that, because the bank would still belong to Barbados. But it is not ran by private people. It is bought out by private people. And the more entities that we have that are generating these millions of dollars in revenue, for example, the Hilton, you could get the money that you need coming in from the interest, from the investments, to do the job that you want done at the Hilton. You didn't have to sell the bank to do that. Now you have no bank. We have 5 private banks. They're making all the money and walking away with it. They're not going to build any roads. They're not going to repair any roads. They're not going to do any capital projects. We, the people, have to look to do that. So the state has to be in a position to generate revenue to do such things. Taxes and fees is not sufficient. It is not sufficient. We must be. It's like your own house. If you give up your job now, which is direct revenue streaming, if you give up your job now, you're going to have to rely on begging or borrowing or until you get another job. All that time, the grass is growing and the horse is starving. Do you understand what I'm saying?
In the case of the Hilton is owned by the government of Barbados. It is just a contract given to the Hilton to run it. So that is one asset that is still owned by the government of Barbados. But the point I was making is that...
But do you understand what I said just now?
I heard you, and I'm saying that the government sells these entities. Mm-hmm. They sell these entities because you make a decision as to whether one is the best, the most optimal use of the resources you have for government to maintain, to keep them and manage them, or whether those resources couldn't be put to better use. And Mr. Ellis was saying to you, in the case of the MBE, the government thought those resources could be put to better use in pushing them into the Hilton Hotel.
But now we know it's a thought loss. Now we know it's a thought loss.
Well,
because if you have an entity that is generating profits, why are you going to get rid of that one time when you could rely on the profits of these entities every year, every quarter?
I think that there's more to it than that, though. The profit motive is not the only factor that should influence the decisions. I think there's also the extent to which a particular entity can leverage its position in the market to help influence behavior on the part of other competitors.
No problem, but
we see that today in relation to the commercial banking sector. The original idea behind having a national bank was aimed at trying to help influence the market more so than anything else at the time.
You ever heard of Mr. Harry Russell?
I see him writing.
Was he ever a guest on this program?
He was invited, but Mr. Russell prefers to write. He feels more comfortable writing.
Well, I tell you, I believe that most people listen to Brass Tacks than they do.
Some people are more comfortable writing than talking.
Okay.
And but some are more comfortable talking than writing.
But we need to find a way to get Mr. Harry Russell on the interviews, because this is a man that can shed in-depth light on the value of the Barbados National Bank and why it should not have been sold.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for your contribution. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. So you see how we begin a discussion about ICBL, but then it expands to a wider discussion about where Barbados is in relation to investment opportunities, what needs to be done, how can Barbadians respond to the challenges that are put before us, what government is putting on the table right now in relation to these other companies that it is trying to divest. It's a much bigger discussion point that we find ourselves into here today. And thank you so much for coming and staying with us for the duration of this program. I don't know how much more time you have. We'll go to the news and we'll come back after that, because there are several other questions and quite a number of people are on the phone, and several people are actually making contributions via WhatsApp as well. Yes,
okay.
Let's take another call. Hello. Good afternoon. It's 12:22. You're on the air.
You're on the team, David, for really a good program, because this is the kind of discussion we have to get Barbadians investing.
We'll get them investing.
You're always going to get some hiccups, and there are a number of reasons you've articulated, as well as Doug, a number of them. And usually the circumstances has to be taken very closely. So, for example, you'll find that Barbados went through a very difficult period. So the options to get us out of there were not many. But that doesn't say that if we could manage and go forward in the future, that we as Barbados can invest in our country. So, you get these hiccups. Now, I'd like to compliment as well Ms. Stewart, who was on, because she raised a number of interesting points of why we as Barbadians have to be able to invest in our company. I mean, you look at it now, we're asking people to invest in, the renewable energy, things like that, and that goes back to telecoms, light and power, the waterworks, any one of them. But I think what we've got to do, which is where I thought the other call was going, is that in some of these entities, we only get into problems once the 51% goes. So perhaps we could invite the Barbadians to invest, but make sure that we still have a way of not letting that 51% go. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect I think that we need to look at, in my mind, is that if you take note in our class action suit with Cayman Warriors, which we wouldn't discuss a lot, we just want to let members know, like Ms. Stewart, who have not yet joined, that you can still come on board until the trial actually starts. We have got to stand up because, as you know, David, most of the investment opportunities are very few. The banks, the interest is low. And, you know, we have to be able to get these lovely opportunities to invest in. So I would suggest that for ICBL, I'm not a shareholder, sorry, I'm not, but I would suggest that the shareholders come together, form a group, just as we did with the minority shareholders in Cayman Wireless, and then together you'll find that the numbers will stack up to be able to pay a good lawyer to be able to represent their interests, because there's no way we should have a stock price at $3. And that point out the reason why perhaps we know the Bermuda company is sold. Good reasons on their part strategically. But we now have to make sure that then, because of that, that all of our minority shareholders then don't get the shaft. And I would suggest that the minority shareholders come together and call the meeting. Doug and myself and our team would be willing to share some of our, you know, experience so that they won't have to recreate the wheel. But we've got to stand up on this one. Yeah. We really have to do that. But I really want to thank you, David, and the team for this excellent work there this morning.
All right. Thank you very much for calling.
Thanks,
Ryan. Dr. Brastax, hello.
Hello, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
This is Mohammed Nasser.
Yes, sir.
I'm listening to your program. But, Mr. Doug Skeet, how are you, sir?
I'm fine.
Good, Mr. Nasser. Nice to hear you.
Yes.
I want to ask a few things, but I see what happens when we get there. The same way that we are saying that, man, every time the government run things, they don't run well, or they don't run as good as when the private sector run them. But if you look at all the banks in Barbados and the insurance companies and various, the owners don't run them. They employ professionals to run them, ain't it? Is it not time enough that the government stop selling off all the assets of people and really employ professionals to run them?
And and there were professionals. They're professionals who would have been running these institutions.
By working for the government. In other words, we know that the civil service must have got the best brains anyway in Barbados, but that's not what I'm saying. What I am saying is, if the government has a bank, do not allow the civil servants to run the bank. Employ those kids and the various people with the brain and ability that can manage banks and pay them well. Yeah. And the same way that the Republic Bank as well could be successful, I bet you that very little owners of any work at those banks.
No, you know that what would have to happen is that the politicians would have to resist the urge to pick up the phone and call the manager and tell the manager he's sending somebody there, look after them for me. Even if the person is not up to standard, you know, don't blame the public servants, you know.
I ain't blame public servants for nothing. I'm just saying that the government must set up these entities and they must let them run outside of the public servants. That's the point I'm making.
There's another significant point here which we need to come back to. You got to look at publicly listed companies in Barbados and the degree to which they are really living up to expectations, you know. There are questions here about that aspect of it as well. I mean, there are certain things that are in law they are supposed to adhere to and that sort of thing, but some people are questioning the degree to which they are brought under the kind of scrutiny that they ought to be brought under, and perhaps the environment is helping to create that as well. Good afternoon and welcome to the continuation of today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. We didn't set out to speak exclusively on the question of the plight of minority shareholders in the country. We started off by having Doug Skeet of the Barbados Association of Corporate Shareholders join us to talk about the concerns that have been raised by some shareholders in ICBL. Their complaint has been that some of them really are being forced to sell against their wishes and at a price lower than they consider to be fair. But coming out of that, we have gone into a discussion on the opportunities that exist or don't exist for people to invest in companies in this country, and to look broadly at the plight of minority shareholders in a number of companies in Barbados that have been the subject of takeover. Now, Doug Skeet is still with us, and we are joined also by Marlon Yard of the Barbados Stock Exchange. And now, Mr. Yard, you need to put in perspective what is happening here as it relates to investment in local companies. We have spoken on this program today about the extent to which there has been a significant reduction in the number of companies that have been listed on the Barbados Stock Exchange. What are your thoughts? Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm here, Dan.
Yes, I can hear you. Go ahead.
I'm here, David, but I'm not hearing you.
Well, I can't figure that out. You put on your headphones or something like that. Perhaps that's...
I'm not hearing you.
Okay. Well, Dennis will talk to you, and when you're ready, when you've got yourself sorted out, you'll talk to me. In the meantime, let's take another call. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, Alan. Welcome. Yes, Alan. Mr. Nasser, yes.
Yeah. No, I was talking just now. I want to switch to something else.
Mm-hmm.
We have in Barbados, every time people hear about a good deal, they're rushing and they're investing the money into it. Is it not time that we get experts like Doug and his association, so that he's involved with, to really ask our people, and if they have to pay, they should pay. You want to invest some money? Discuss it with these organizations. Let them tell you their opinion on it. Furthermore, it might not be right if you have $100,000 to invest to put in one company because one investment company because you believe you can make all this money. It might be wise to share it to move it around so that if any danger come, and it can come sometimes, that at least you have some balance. I'd like to hear Mr. Skeet talking on a side like that.
Mr. Nasser?
Yeah.
Yeah, the couple things there. Given advice. To give advice, one has to have a license. You have to be licensed with the Financial Services Commission.
Yeah.
All right? So, because, you know, that's a risk. You give someone advice and then something happens. They lose some money on an investment. They may very well blame you and seek to take legal action.
Yeah.
So there are a number of brokers in Barbados. You just need to seek them out, and they can advise you. But for me personally, what we do is we just give general advice. We don't give specific. So I wouldn't necessarily give anyone specific advice since I don't hold a license to do that. So our body was just really to encourage shareholders to be more vibrant and active, attend meetings, try to understand the companies that when you invest, you know what you're investing in. And as well, like what we are doing now, we're making comments on the fairness of an offer and to say, look, this thing doesn't look fair and maybe it should be looked at, and encourage the shareholders to get together, come together, and discuss what remedies they think they need to take to deal with this type of situation.
Well, who would guide them, Mr. Skeet? I mean, they could come together. If you put a whole bunch of experience together, they're still inexperienced. So who would guide them to advise them like you are doing now and VOB is doing here now? Can these people go to, and why should they not be advised by your organization? I know your organization cannot do it based on what you just explained, but your organization can tell them about a whole set of other organizations that they can choose from to get advice. What I am worried about is that our people taking up a lot of money and dumping it into one investment because it looks good, and then when it collapses, they lose all. It might be better to have some all around. That's the main point, and I think they need experts to advise them, and they should be paying for it.
Right,
and Mr. Skeet, your organization as it is can't do that, but you just mentioned a few around that can do it. So
sure.
Is it not wise to advise the people when they're going to invest? Don't try to be too greedy. to try and make, think you can make all this money one time, because obviously you will lose all one time if something go wrong, but spread it around.
Sure.
That's the point I'm trying to get, and
yeah.
Don't you think that's something that should be spoken to the people?
Yeah, of course. You know. And there are brokers around that they can, I mean, I can recommend a broker. There are financial individuals as well
who right.
may have the license who could do that. So it's just seeking out the information, and once you get that information, proceed on that basis. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right.
Much.
Okay. Thanks.
Some other issues which are being raised. Somebody today raised the issue of Caribbean Examinations Council and the dispute that exists right now between the council and some of the students and parents. And somebody else has also sent us, well, they said they didn't want this to be ignored. I told them that they should call, because if they don't want to ignore it, they should be prepared to come and speak about it themselves. But there's also a very relevant question as to whether the CXC is susceptible to the jurisdiction of the CCJ or local courts. So that is, there's an article which has been sent to me here, and I haven't had a chance to read it, but the person who sent the article says that they heard in the 12:30 news that students are suggesting that they're going to take the CXC to court. Well, they understand their pain and support their efforts wholeheartedly. Unfortunately, as a lawyer, I am not sure the courts have any jurisdiction, including the CCJ, to hear any matter involving the CXC. Please see the below article, which explains why. It's a pretty detailed article, and I haven't been able to read it in its entirety just yet. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
Yes, good afternoon.
The ownership of a company by the state goes beyond just making money. I appreciate everything that a caller about 3 callers ago was saying about direct earnings and stuff. You know, it says that Barbados are here to be exploited, if not by government, by the private sector or both. And really and truly, what should be happening is finding ways to earn foreign exchange, which is the money that we really live off of, particularly now that we have these credit cards, for which there's probably no control over when you can just shop overseas, not to actually call Visa debits. And it's, you know, and that's it. I mean, your money is now being converted directly to U.S. money, and your foreign reserves be damned. But the National Bank was owned by the Barbados government, and it gave the government an opportunity to direct or determine banking policy with regards to service to the public. I mean, this talk about moral suasion, which was what the central bank governor uses all the time, does not work, has never really worked. But when we had a retail bank, the government owned a retail bank, they can set terms through that retail bank that the other banks will be forced to follow or be left out. And that is the reason why you had an ownership of a particular enterprise, because you can drive policy through retail, you know, but just by setting your standards by that, you know, by the operation. Now, all these companies exploit Barbados. None of them don't earn a real foreign exchange. And the late Owen Arthur actually said that when you sold the bank is now making more money for Barbados than it was before, which really makes no sense anyway, because when it was making money, if it was making more money for the coffers of government, you, David Ellis, nor me were seeing any of that. You see, it was just going back into paying public service, and probably that was it. So I think that the ownership of a foreign enterprise, particularly one that services Barbados, one that is owned by the government, is only there, it's there and it's for a specific reason of driving policy. And that's it. You know, so when you lose those operations, and there's nothing wrong now with the government of Barbados deciding, okay, I'm going to start up a new bank. There's nothing wrong with it, because if they go now and decide to start a new bank, I can tell you a lot of people are going to be pulling their deposits, you know, whatever they put in the current Trinidadian and Canadian bank, they're putting it with the government bank. And the reason for the government not doing so is, well, you got to tell me. If a government decides it's opening a bank tomorrow, they will have just about half of the market. They will just go forward. People just invest in that particular bank. But then, of course, they may do it and realize, you know, something there's nothing, this government now decide 5 or 10 years ago again to sell like they did with the last bank, which is always a problem, you know. When it comes to municipal offerings and stuff, what took place last year was a tragedy. When you invested in government offerings, you're supposed to be, as Mr. Mesquite said is sacrosanct. And all of a sudden, if the government offers you something, you're not supposed to say, oh my, are you thinking twice? You're not supposed to think twice. But no, in Barbados, that is done. Yeah, and that kind of confidence will never come back again. But unfortunately, there really is not much in terms of offering now when it comes to, you know, to investment. You know, and most of these investments, in any event, just exploit Barbadians. They're not really foreign exchange earners in any event. So I don't care. You know, about investing in Barbadian companies. I'm very sorry. It doesn't mean it's not part of this process.
Thank you very much. Just a story here that I'm looking at from Guyana, which says that a Barbadian seaman on Friday took the rap for his four other colleagues who were charged in connection with the bust of 150 pounds of marijuana aboard a Barbados-registered cargo boat. Michael Ford was fined, note, 51 million Guyana dollars and sentenced to 4 years imprisonment for the offense of trafficking in narcotics. Even if it's $51 million is still a lot of money to, you know, when you convert that into U.S., this man has been heavily fined. Those against whom charges were dismissed, and they indicated who these people were. Three Barbadians and three Guyanese were arrested during the Wednesday night drugs bust at a wharf in southern Georgetown, from where the vessel, registered as CV1, was preparing to leave with agricultural produce. So this man has been jailed and fined. Michael Ford is the name that they have given. They have given no address, either from Guyana or Barbados. This is down to brass tacks. Hello? You're on the air? Hello?
Hello, Dennis. This is Marlon. I'm here.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I can hear you. We're using the landline.
Okay, all right. So, you've heard a lot of this discussion about the investment climate in this country, and in particular, all of these companies that have delisted from the stock exchange, the threat of others, the question of a regional stock exchange, the loss of confidence on the part of the Barbadian investor, people who put the money into this company, that company, and then left stranded as minority shareholders, as they see it. Some people have said, yeah, we got through well enough, and if we had to sell after that, fine. Some people have had a good deal, but a number of people feel shaken by how things have turned out. What do you say to them?
Well, first of all, David, the Barbados market is a well-regulated market. Whenever a takeover bid goes to the market, the offeror has to deliver a takeover bid offer, which is reviewed and regulated and signed off on by the or regulator, the FSC. Now, when you look at the takeover code of Barbados, there's stipulated things that must be included in the takeover code. And in all instances, the companies making the offer satisfies the requirements under the legislation. And by the same token, the target company, the directors of that company need to make a director's circular, which makes a recommendation to the shareholders as to whether or not to take up the offer. And the director's circular for this offer from the directors of the ICBL should soon be coming out to the market for persons to hear what the directors of the company is saying. So people need not fear that they are being taken advantage of, because both the buyer and the seller have certain obligations under the legislation, and they fulfill those requirements as per the legislation. And this is overseen.
So what types of questions would they have to answer?
Who's this? The directors?
Yes.
No, in the director's circular, the main thing in that circular is a recommendation as to whether or not you should, they recommend to the shareholders whether or not they should accept the particular offer. But as I said, there's specific things they need to say, and that will be said in the director's circular. As it relates to the offer circular, there's specific things under the takeover code that needs to be said, and they've done that. You know, they've basically said what the price is, what they intend to do if they intend to take up all the shares, and these things would have been said in the particular takeover circular that was offered by the offer of the company. Also, too, they would normally state that if they get 90% of the shares that they did not previously own, that the law makes provision for them to do a squeeze out provision where they can buy all the shares of the existing shareholders. Now, if the shareholders do not agree with the price, they can go to the court, and this is seen, the process for that is seen under Section 193 to 196 of the Companies Act, and the process involved, the number of days that they have to go to the court to make an application, and that the court would determine if the price being offered is fair, is a fair and reasonable price that was being offered by the company. So there are provisions in the Companies Act that governs these things. So things does not happen without oversight by legislation and by the regulators involved in the process. So people need not fear that things are not being done in the right way.
What about the price difference that has been highlighted?
Well, I cannot speak directly to the price being offered is fair. What I do know is that in any situation, business persons would not sell an asset if they don't in fact get a fair price for that asset. So I would assume that some valuation would have been done. I cannot speak to that. I do not know, but I would assume so. And the price on the board of the stock exchange is a reflection of how persons perceived the value of the company to be at the point in time they traded their shares. So it's a transaction between a willing seller and a willing buyer. So somebody wants to sell their shares, they're going to try to get the maximum price. Somebody wants to buy them, they're going to try to get to lower that price. And it's like buying a shirt. You're going into the fish market to buy fish. The vendors say, well, this is what I'm selling my fish at. You say, well, no, I don't. I prefer to pay that. You come to some agreement and you strike a price, and that is what happens with the board of the exchange. So prior to the offer being made, people perceive the value to be, I think the last traded price was $3, but the parties agreed on a particular price between themselves, and as I said, it comes down to a negotiation between the parties. Some sort of valuation probably would have taken place, and they agreed on the price. It just so happens that in this instance, the price that was being offered or that was sold, the company was sold for, is lower than what was the last traded price. The ICBL shares were not an actively traded security, and so those persons at the time of trading in the market would have sold these shares based on how they see the value of the company to be.
Doug.
Yeah, let me just pick up Marlene a few things because I don't necessarily agree. Let's start the director's circular, Marlene.
Yeah.
This offer came out on the 18th of September. It's going to expire on the 20th of October. All right?
Yeah.
So we are about 27 days in. Sorry, it's the 18th. Today is the 8th.
Today is the 9th.
21 days. It's going to expire on the 20th. And Marlene, you can't say when the director's circular is coming out. And you are asking, there's an offer to minority shareholders with a document of 27 or close to 30 pages. And at this moment, you can't tell when that director's circular is going to be out. Now, that's certainly not fair to the minority shareholders. Because
in a situation like this, they need all the time necessary to make a decision. And
yeah.
to be at this stage where director circle is not out, is totally unfair to the minority shareholders. That's one. The other thing you're talking about, the price.
Let's take a pin. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Respond to that point.
Yeah, I'm not at liberty to say when the director circular will come out, but I do agree with you. The timing there might be issue with the timing, but a director circular will be out.
Yeah, okay, but if it comes at the
I take your point, though. I take your point as it relates to the timing of
right. And your intervention with regulating the stock exchange, well, no one questioned the regulation. We were talking about the fairness of this price, and nothing to do with the regulation. The other thing with you talking about is a price. Two persons sit down and agree on a price. And look, you've seen a number of these companies that did a similar thing, Banks Holdings, BS&T. And you know full well that once you had another, a third party get into the ring, that the price that we've seen these prices on the stock exchange where there were two participants vying for takeover of these companies, that in most of these cases, that price went from what it was, and in some cases, almost doubled. Okay? Now, so to suggest that these two, of course, they're going to sit down and come at a price. We don't know the basis. And what we want is we know that the value, the 178, is way below the market price. And we know that in an instance where a company is vying for an exchange between a small person who's buying 10 shares is not the same thing as a person who is buying a 51% interest. They're two completely different things. All right? So the value of those two transactions cannot be the same. So when I go and buy 10 shares, I'm not trying to buy control of a company. I'm just buying 10. But when I go to buy 51%, I am getting almost the whole shebang. I'm controlling the company, controlling its direction, and that is worth more 51% than the 10 shares that I'm buying. So that has to be reflected in the price of the shares. So to suggest that the 178, I'm not sure if you're suggesting that makes
sense.
I'm not suggesting that.
What I'm saying is that obviously there would have to be some negotiation between the parties. And
right.
For example, the principle is the same whether it's 10 shares or 20 million shares. You want to make sure that you get the best possible price when you're selling, and as a person purchasing, you want to make sure that you're not overpaying for those shares. And these are businessmen, sophisticated business people, sitting across the table, making a determination as to the fairness of the price of those shares in their transaction. So the principle is the same regardless of if it's 10 shares, or 100,000.
But you know, my question was a bit broader than just what is happening here at the ICBL level. It is about the trend, and the question which many people are asking is whether the Barbados Stock Exchange, based upon the current trajectory, and what happens with the Barbadian money, that liquidity that exists out there in the banking system, that we are being told all the time should be put into investment. But when we look at the stock exchange, people say, but what can I invest in? How can I invest in this when it looks as though everything is being delisted? How do you respond to that as the person who is running this particular company and institution at the moment?
Well, this is something that engages the mind of the management and board of the Barbados Stock Exchange all the time. Matter of fact, our strategic planning meeting last week, I think it was, and it was a key thing that came up. And we've put together some ideas as to the way forward. What what I can say to you is that we can't do it on our own. We need to get the support of the policymakers within the island of Barbados. You know, I heard before somebody mentioned about the Jamaica Stock Exchange and how they were doing and how they were able to how active they are. Now, one of the main things that caused the Jamaica Stock Exchange to be propelled and in some years have been one of the best performing exchanges in the world is that back in 2009, they were granted incentives. Companies listed on that exchange was given a tax incentive, and it was mainly focused on the small to medium sized enterprises, where they had a tax holiday for 10 years. The first 5 years was income taxes were exempt from income taxes, and then for the second 5 years, the income tax they paid 50% of what the income tax rate was. This resulted in significant number of companies listing on the junior market of the Jamaica Stock Exchange. Matter of fact, only yesterday I was speaking to the head of the Jamaica Stock Exchange, Marlene Street Forrest, to get an idea from her. Well, Marlene, you know, how are things going as it relates to your listings on the exchange? And she highlighted the numbers. She said, I think they have about 97, no, let me just tell you, I have it here. They have 50 companies with 64 securities on the main market and 41 companies with 44 securities listed on their market. So they have a total of 93 companies and 129 securities. And that was in no small part to the incentives that was given to companies to list on the exchange.
Well, in that context, therefore, what are we recommending here?
No, the thing is, we have to make our own efforts. Part of the thing that we need to do at the stock exchange is to do more education as to both on the supply side, getting more companies interested in listing, and on the demand side, getting more people in the marketplace wanting to participate in the market. And we recognize the problem, and we're making efforts to get that corrected. One initiative that we're doing is, you might be letting the cat out of the bag, is that we're working with the Small Business Association and the Ministry of Small Business to see how we can...
Sorry, but there's a lot of racket. I believe it may be coming from Doug's end. It is creating a problem here, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yes, you were saying.
Right, so we're working with these entities, partnering with these entities, develop a program to encourage companies, small to medium-sized enterprises, to list on exchange. So the thing is, any well-functioning economy needs to have a vibrant capital market. And we're seeing that this has happened in the Jamaica instance. It has benefited the economy of Jamaica with overall economic activity, has benefited the stock exchange there, and has benefited the small to medium-sized enterprises as a consequence. So we're looking at the template there, and we're working to replicate that and do the same thing. So
the problem here is that we've been saying this for so long. I mean, it's years now that we have been watching the trend and saying that we need to do something about it. We've also at the same time been talking about a regional stock exchange, which seems to have gone nowhere. So at both levels, the domestic and at the regional level, there seems to be an absence of progress, and it's one step forward, two steps backward, some people may say. What do you say to that?
Well, what I can say is that we at the Stock Exchange recognize the problem, and we've been working behind the scenes for some time to get certain things done. A few years back, we had approached the previous administration as it relates to having the tax incentives in place, and what was done did not satisfy the requirements that we had envisioned. One of the things that was done in the legislation, and this was the Income Tax Act, was that they placed a requirement on in the Act that says that if you want to list on the junior market of the exchange, that you basically could only, no one shareholder could own more than 25% of the company. We didn't even worry to promote that initiative because no business person or small to medium-sized entrepreneur is going to give up 75% of their company. So we have been making efforts to get the market going, and we will continue to do so.
Let me get a call or two before we finish here today, because it's now 1:17. We should have more than one call, one or two calls. But this is Down to Brass Tacks.